Blog Talk Radio.
Control. We're gonna free our soul.
evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Rifleman Radio Show. The Rifleman Radio Show is dedicated to bringing the absolute best information possible on firearms, marksmanship, rifle safety, and the responsibility of every citizen to help shoulder the load of safeguarding the freedoms and liberties that we enjoy by virtue of living in this nation. I want to tell everybody thanks for showing up tonight, and I want to tell you that the title of the show is the zombie apocalypse already here? And now you guys have heard me talking about the BattleRoadUSA.com zombie apocalypse that's coming in a couple of weeks, a shooting event. But this is a completely different thing. I have to wonder, we have all this talk about zombies and about the world coming to an end due to zombies. And, of course, you see it in the movies with hordes of rotting, undead zombies attacking everybody and biting them and spreading the viruses and mainly just spreading mayhem and destruction and death. Well, I'm sure one of the reasons that these shows are so popular, especially shows like The Walking Dead, are because these shows are analogy for things that we're experiencing right now. I mean, you think about this. How many people are going through every day of their life? They're going through like a zombie, or at least a somnambulist. They're sleepwalking through their lives. They're living their lives by rote. You know how when you go to work and you've been working somewhere. Okay, was I off the air again? Sam, can you hear me? Okay, I think I just clocked back in. Okay, did you hear me in the beginning? I see Ed in the chat room. Did you hear me in the beginning doing the welcoming?
Yeah, we got you, Mike. You're on.
Okay. All right. I didn't know if something happened again, or I still haven't figured out what I'm going to do with the radio show, where I'm going to take it, or what I'm going to do with it. But I've got to the point now where I'm just expecting things to go wrong. Anyway, you've got folks that are living their lives like they're sleepwalking. And the example I was going to give is like when you've driven somewhere, maybe your drive to work or home from work or something like that, and you've driven it so many times, that a lot of times you'll get in the car and you'll be thinking about something or doing something else, and the next thing you know, you're at home, and you don't really remember the trip. Or somebody will say, hey, did you notice the so-and-so's was open? And you go, I don't have no idea if they were or not. And they say, well, that's the only store on the road. It's all woods the rest of the way. You don't know if it was even passed by it and noticed if it was open? Nope, sure didn't. And that's what I'm talking about. Now, I'm not saying that if that happens to you, that you're in some kind of state of being one of the undead. I'm just saying that you can apply that same type of experience to your whole life. So many people get up in the morning and they get their cup of coffee and they fix it exactly the same way. And it's not hard because they're doing it from muscle memory usually. They're still halfway asleep. And they make the coffee. And you see the jokes all the time about people like going in to get the coffee and they forgot to get the cup, but they're standing with their fingers curled like around an imaginary cup and they're holding it under the coffee machine and it's just going down into the drain because they don't really have a coffee cup. So they're asleep. They thought they did, but they didn't. And that's what I'm talking about with people today, the way that they're living their lives. You've got folks that they're living their lives. They're actually there in their body is there anyway, and they're living their lives. But they're asleep. They're living their lives asleep. And that's very, very dangerous. Because if you're one of the undead or a somnambulist, then nothing really matters to you, right? If you're one of the undead, the only thing that matters to you is shuffling along as long as you have an open pathway, because if there's anything that's over 2 or 3 inches high, you can't go over it, right? You can't put your legs up. You got to shuffle. You're a zombie, you got to shuffle. And so you have to figure out some way to walk around that. If you're a sleepwalker, you're kind of doing the same thing. You may even get up and be to what you think is making coffee in your bedroom. Or you may get up and you think you're in the bathroom, but you're in your closet peeing into your sock drawer. That's the way somnambulists live their lives. And a good number of us are doing that. And we've gotten into a rut. We want to do the right things. We want to figure it out. And we keep saying, okay, well, you're right, we'll do that. I got to do it. I got to remember to do that. I'm going to do that. I'm going to figure that out. And that's how we do it. That's how we do it. And, of course, everybody knows someday is a mythical land far, far away. So how are we going to fix this? Because this is very dangerous. The world is spinning around. The world is flowing over us, and we're not paying attention to it. We're not understanding what's happening to us, and things are going on that we should be stopping, but we're not. We've got to figure out some way to fix that. Okay. I told you guys before that the whole reason I do a live show, a call-in show, is so that you can call in, right? You can call in, and you can get your opinions, and you can express them over the air, and that's what I want you to do. The call-in number is 347-308-8790. I want you guys to call in and give me your opinions on this, and let's figure out a way to fix this. I don't want you to sit here and talk. Believe me, you don't want that either. Okay? Because there's a lot of times when I over-talk stuff. I remember going to an event last year, maybe it was a couple of years ago, and one of the folks had made a comment to one of the other instructors there, and he told me, he said, yeah, so-and-so said, that guy Scout sure likes to hear himself talk. And the reality is, he couldn't be more wrong, because I've listened to myself. I've got the radio show recorded. I've listened to myself, and I've heard myself talk, and it drives me insane. The reason that I usually over-talk things, like at Appleseed, and sometimes here on the radio too, is because I keep thinking maybe I'm just not saying it the right way. If I said it in a different way, it would get through to folks, and they would understand it better. But let me try. I'm going to say it this way and see if the folks get it this way, because this is important. And plenty of times, plenty of times I go a little bit overboard, but I got to tell you, I think it is very important that we're not letting the things flow by us and over our heads and under our feet until we end up with a country that we don't even recognize. All right. Like I said, I want you guys to call in. I want your opinions. I want you talking on the air. I don't want to be the only one doing this. Number 347-308-8790. All right, we've got Richard from Baton Rouge on the line. Richard, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I agree with what you're saying. It brings to mind the John Carpenter film, They Live, in which we're constantly being, you know, I'm on the phone, we're constantly being, subliminally, you know, given images and say, you know, don't react, you know, keep on going about your lives like nothing's wrong. And, you know, it just makes me tired, so tired that...
Richard, you there? Doggett. Okay, he popped off. Sam, when he comes up, be sure and put him through again. And I know the film he's talking about, They Live. Now, I remember seeing it a few years ago, and I was thinking, oh my gosh, this is. I think I was in one of those trap areas where nothing else was on or something, and the show came on, and I was thinking, okay, I'm going to be tortured for 2 hours now, and the show was actually very good. And once again, you know, it's just like The Walking Dead. It's an analogy for what's going on in folks' lives right now. And, you know, when we have these thousands of things that we're bombarded with every day. The amount of media, the amount of information that we have streaming in at us is unbelievable. And then we have so many things in our lives that we feel are important and that need to take precedence over a lot of other things. But when you watch these shows, you watch something like The Walking Dead or something like that, and the characters there, they very quickly, everything gets stripped away. Everything gets boiled down to its very essence, and that's just staying alive. And you begin to realize how many of the things that you're doing that are superfluous things, it's fluff, it's chafe, and you don't really need it in your life. But it's there, and there's no good way to get rid of it unless there's a zombie apocalypse. Until then, it's like a huge stacked to the ceiling garage, right? That's almost uncleanable. You know, in the back of your mind, you're thinking, "I hope that maybe if I'm lucky, that place will catch fire and burn down," because there's no good way to tackle that problem, right? And that's the same thing with us in our lives. In the movie They Live, you had, I believe that if you wore these special glasses, you could actually see what was going on. And all of the billboards actually had messages, you know, state-sponsored messages on them, like conform. And people didn't realize that they were seeing it. Well, it's the same thing with us. I don't think that there's any alien technology that is spinning this up. I don't think it's needed. I think that most Americans are so ready, are so overloaded that they're going to take the path of least resistance, and that is just going along to get along. And, you know, we've talked on the show many times about the things that, in a perfect world, the things that you could do But it doesn't have to be a perfect world. There's still a lot of things that you can do. Like, number one, don't just suck down the pablum that mainstream media is sending your way. And when I say mainstream media, I'm talking about all of mainstream media. I'm talking about Fox, too. Don't think that just because it comes from Fox, it's any better or any more reliable than ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, any of those guys. Fox has the same agenda, and that is to sell advertising. That's what the news companies do now. They sell advertising. In order to sell advertising, you have to have a bunch of clients. So you have to put on the stuff that's a big draw. You have to sensationalize things in order to get the viewership so that you can count those numbers and then sell your advertising according to the number of viewers you have. So I'm not saying that everything that everybody says is a lie. I'll say it's pretty dang close. And I'm not saying that everything Fox says is a lie. But I'll tell you this. They're no better than the other stations when it comes to sensationalizing things and stretching the truth and spinning yarns. You're going to get the same thing from them. You have to seek out the information in other ways. And we're talking to, last week, we're talking to, I can't remember his name now. Sam, remember his name? The guy from Gunfighter Cast. I believe it was, I can't remember if it was Daniel. Anyway, he and I were talking about this, and because I was saying media, I just kept saying media instead of mainstream media. And, of course, I am part of the media now with the show that's being broadcast, and so is he. Now, I'm talking about mainstream media, about not taking what they say without verifying it or researching it. Go to everybody has the internet now, and even if you don't have a computer, you can go to the library. You can get on the library computer and read there. Research the things that are going on. Find out what's going on in this nation. Find out what's going on in the countries around you. America has to be one of the least educated about anything that happens beyond our borders. It's absolutely a joke. The difference between the way Americans, how their knowledge of the world ends at our borders. Now, of course, you know, we're a large country, and we're semi-isolated. I mean, we've got Canada to the north and Mexico to the south, but nobody to the east and west, and we don't have 15 or 20 other countries that we can jump in the car and drive through two or three countries in a day, like in Europe. America is one solid big chunk, semi-isolated. And a lot of Americans, their understanding of the world stops at our borders. And this is not a good thing, because people need to realize that the world is a very dangerous place. If you go to if you Google North Korean school education, and you're going to come up with millions of documents, but you're going to come up with also videos that show you how the North Koreans are taught from day one that America is their enemy. America is their enemy, and they are taught that to hate America from day one. So are kids in the Middle East. If you see some of the folks... it will blow your mind to see the kids in elementary schools. They're all wearing like uniforms, and what it turns out is all those uniforms that they're wearing are suicide bomber uniforms, and it's been glorified there along with a huge dose of hate for the great Satan, of hate for America. And I don't think that people understand this. I don't think they understand how much anger, how much hate there is toward our nation from a lot of other countries. And I think that Americans would do well to educate themselves on this. But even if you don't want to do that, at least make sure that you're educating yourself on what's going on in your own nation. What's going on in your community? What's going on in your community? What is going on with upcoming elections? Who feels what way about what? Who's going to best serve your needs? A lot of folks, I see this all the time, and people joke about it. They laugh about it when they get there. Where are you going? Well, I'm on the way to vote. And this is even, these are like the good people, the folks that are actually heading out to vote. I'm on my way to vote. Who are you voting for? You know, I still don't know. I guess I'm going to guess I'm gonna have to decide when I get in there. What about the school bond election, or what about the Proposition XYZ? Man, I don't know. I guess I'll have to try and read it and figure it out when I get in there. That is certainly dangerous. That is very dangerous. you can cut out a block of 10 minutes. Let's see what, cut out a block of 30 minutes. Cut out one of the 30-minute sitcoms that you normally listen to, and instead plug in 30 minutes of web surfing to educate yourself on what's going on in your own backyard, in your community, in your county, in your state. Have any of you guys talked to your sheriffs about the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association? Have any of you guys dug around to find out what your sheriffs are going to do about enforcing unconstitutional laws? I think that's pretty important, and I know that you think it is too, but have you done anything about it? I sure would like to hear from somebody who has either talk to their reps or talk to their county sheriffs about this. And remember, guys, like I said, let's show that I've got callers, but I've got callers who have been dropping. I don't know. I guess, suppose that's because of Blog Talk. But listen, I would like for some of you guys who have talked to your county sheriffs or talk to your reps about this to call in and tell me what they said. 347-308-8790. 347-308-8790. If you talk to your sheriffs or to any of the law enforcement in your community, I'd like to hear what they have to say about this, because there are a great number of county sheriffs who are the highest law enforcement officers in the nation, in your county in the nation, who have decided that they are not going to enforce unconstitutional laws. Have any of you guys out there talked to any of your sheriff's departments and found out what they're going to do? Because I would like to, I'd like to hear what they're saying. I'd like to hear what they say that they're going to do. I've got a batch of stuff that I'm dropping off this week at the sheriff's office here locally, and I'll tell you what they say about this. Now, I already went 2 years ago, and I got a really kind of a cool reception at the time. Number one, I was not law enforcement, and number two, I think this is, like I said, this was 2 years ago. I think that this concept was one that was pretty new, and it seemed very radical at the time, because folks weren't reading to see what it was. They were just they were just hearing talk about sheriffs resisting federal unconstitutional laws. But I'll tell you what they say this week when I go by there. But I would like to hear what you guys have heard from your local counties. Yeah, even if you haven't talked to anybody, if you know what your local county is, what their stance is on this, I'd like you to call in and let the rest of us know. 347-308-8790. Or if you've talked to any law enforcement or military, and you don't need to use anybody's names on here, but if you talk to any law enforcement or military, I'd like for you to tell us what they have said about what they're going to do about this. Now, I'm sure that because of all of the interest in this and all of the hubbub that there's going to be something, some kind of movement on it pretty soon. And they've already done some things like eliminate county sheriffs in two of the states now. Sam, do you have something you want to add to that?
Well, I was going to say that I spoke with our county sheriff. I invited him to one of our meetings last month to get his position on that, because it was quite a stink, and the State Association of Sheriffs had gotten together, and one of their spokesmen put out a position that sounded like they weren't going to support the Constitution very much. I spoke with our sheriff, and he's quite adamant that he supports the Constitution. But I took the trouble to ask him, whose version of the Constitution are you supporting? Because the Constitution doesn't always say what we think it says. And simply because we have read and can understand the words "shall not be infringed" does not mean that the courts and the sheriff see it the same way. So you really need to pin down that sheriff to more than just, "I'll do what the Constitution says." Find out whose interpretation of the Constitution he's paying attention to.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And I was reading an article about this, and I'll let Sam talk in just a minute so that I can dig out and find it for you. Because you guys know me, the minute I start typing or something, that's it, I'm gone. But it brought up a lot of good points about this. And I'm going to find it here. Sam's going to he's going to fill your ears while I'm finding this, because I want you guys to hear this.
Well, while Scout's looking for that, I'll tell you that a very small board that I deal with is full of famous and infamous gun writers and lawyers and me, and we discuss some of these things kind of roughly. And I was put on to an article in the Wall Street Journal yesterday that reminded us in pretty clear terms that we tend to look at like we won a lot on the Second Amendment with the Heller and McDonald decisions. And we have, but the court has held that even though it is an individual right, the state has a right to infringe. Somewhere the Supreme Court is seeing this legal infringement that we don't care to recognize. And Heller and McDonald don't hardly make the Second Amendment settled law in America. Now, there are a lot of people out there that would love to do away with the Second Amendment or modify it in such a way as to keep us from having our rights stay as established as they are. We can't sit back on our laurels because of Heller and McDonald. We need to press this issue, this fight in the courts. We need to not stand by and allow it to lull us into a sense of false security. It may take an entire generation for Heller and McDonald to become settled law. And if we sit back on our laurels and think that it already is, we can lose a lot. In a couple of minutes, I'll post a link to that article on the chat board, and I invite you all to take a read at it at your leisure. You're going to find that the fight is far from over. You need to be in intimate contact with those senators and representatives, your state senators and representatives. We sat back on our laurels here in New Mexico and thought, well, this local assault weapon ban and more intensive background check business is going to go bye-bye. It didn't happen. They made it out of committee, got voted through by the state house, and our illustrious, highly conservative Governor Susana Martinez says she's going to sign it. That's in New Mexico, a place where people wander around with guns all the time, and they're not unusual to see. So you need to start thinking about where your senators and congressmen really are.
Yeah, exactly. Because like you said, there's a lot of people that they read it different ways. And one of the things that I'd like to point out is that, and we've mentioned this on the show quite a few times, and a lot of our guests have, but the Constitution does not give us our rights, and especially not not things like the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. And if you read it, you can understand very easily, I think, the meaning or the situation, because first of all, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights don't give rights, right? They're just enumerating. They're just telling you what the rights are. And when you talk about the Second Amendment, it says this right, before it ever lists it, it says this right shall not be infringed. So what it is, what it's saying is that there is already a right in place. Before you ever get to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, there's already a right in place. And that right is put in place by either a higher power or by the universe itself, and that is the right to defend yourself, the right to defend your life and your loved one's life. This isn't a right that we are being given by the government. That's very important, because people say this all the time. I'm exercising my right that's given to me by the Constitution. That right is not given to you by the Constitution or given to you by the government. And that's a very dangerous way to think of it, because if you were of a mind that the government is giving you something, that the government is creating a right and giving it to you, then you are also accepting the fact that that government can then take away that right that it created and gave to you. And that right was already in existence before there was a government, before there was woven cotton, before there were cars or horses and buggies or shoes even. You have that right to defend yourself. You have a right not to be killed by someone else. And if you have that right, that means that you have the right to defend yourself against somebody doing you harm. And if they are a person that has a knife or a club or an axe or a gun, then you have a right to defend yourself in whatever it takes, whatever fashion it takes, in order to save your life. And if that's a gun, then that's a gun. Now, you could look at it in the way that the government thinks about it if you wanted to, and that That also brings to mind something that that's kind of funny too, because if you listen to our president giving the State of the Union, and I got to tell you, I'm not going to say anything other than I've been here for half a century, and during that half a century, I've seen a lot of presidents. I've heard a lot of presidents getting up in their pulpit and talking. But one thing I have never heard is somebody that gave a State of the Union that was filled with ayes and nays. I was trying to count it, and I lost track at about 35 ayes. And I don't understand that. I mean, how can that be? He's giving a speech, and everything that he says rolls back on him, because I believe in his mind, he is the source of all good. He's the source of all good that is coming to the nation. And I think that in a lot of cases, he really believes that. I think he really does believe it. But if you listen to it, then you would hear President Obama talking about people have the right. They have the right to health care. They have a right to health care. And because they have that right, then the government is going, if they can't do it, the government is going to pay for it for them. So if you think about this as in a reverse right like that, and you could think about the Second Amendment in the same way, that you have, say my wife has to drive on a long, lonely road all by herself to pick up the kids from school and bring them home every day, and she has a right to defend herself. She has a right, and she has a right to defend herself with a gun, but maybe she can't afford one. And if she can't afford a gun, then in the same way that you have a right to health care, and if you can't afford it, it'll be provided for you, then maybe the government should start buying firearms for people. All right? I know it sounds crazy, but let's just think about that for a minute. Maybe the government should start paying for firearms for people. If they have a right to a phone, if they have a right to internet connection, if they have a right to satellite TV, then and if they can't afford it, the government's going to pay for it for them. They're going to take our tax money, which they collect at the point of a gun, and they are going to buy phones and internet connections and everything else and health care for people who can't afford it. Well, if you have a basic right to life and to the defense of your life, and you can't afford a firearm, then it certainly logically falls into place that the government should be buying one for you. Right? I mean, just think about that for a minute. Now, I know that that President Obama said that the government is going to start investing in businesses. And all I've got to say about that is the same thing that I just said about the money they were getting to give to people for the Obama phones and internet access and cable TV access and just about everything you can imagine. You know, my wife is a Judge Judy junkie. And almost every time you see some of those folks in there that are there in court, and she'll ask him, what do you do?
I don't do anything. The government is supporting me, so SSI. Why? Why is it supporting you? Because I get nervous, so I can't work. Well, what about your parents? Well, they're on disability too. And what about your kids? They're on SSI too. And and nobody is working in that home. Nobody is working in that home because they're all on the government's rolls. And this is happening all over. And the government is taking the money. Now he's talking about the government is going to have to start investing in businesses and small business. And my reply to that is why? Why is the government doing this? It's not the government's role to do this. Not the government's role to gather money and then to take it and put it into small businesses. And the thing that upsets me about that is, once again, the government is doing this at the point of a gun. They're taking your money at the point of a gun. Now, that sounds a little bit dramatic, doesn't it? And you say, well, obviously they're not taking their money at the point of a gun. I fill out the tax forms, and I enclose a check and send it in. That's right, you do. But if you didn't, for some reason, I guarantee you, they would be at your house, and it would end up at the point of a gun that they would take the money. They're going to take this money, and now they're going to invest it in small business. And I got to ask the question, too, why? This isn't their job. That's not what they were meant to do. And the last thing I want is investment advice from the government. I think if you ask them, if you said, look, I'll make this investment that you're asking, if you all you have to do is point to one single project that you have ramrodded that is successful. And remember, guys, I'm not talking about Democrats or Republicans. I'm talking about government. Okay, just like Appleseed talks about weather and climate, I'm talking about the government as one entity. I'd like the government to point to a single project that it has ramrodded that it can say, this was a success. Better yet, how about this? Let's have the government leave us be. Leave us be. Let us start and run successful or unsuccessful companies on our own. Let the chips fall where they may. Let the cream rise to the top. No more handouts. No more bailouts. Let the chips fall where they may. And the government get out of the business of investing in things with our money. That's what private sector investment is for. That's what buying stocks and bonds are for. All right. Once again, guys, the whole reason that I'm doing this, unless you just want to sit here and listen to me rant about this, then I would suggest that you call in and give me the things that you want to talk about or you want to say, and we'll talk about them. 347-308-8790. 347-308-8790.
the government has become like a hydra. It's like a huge million-headed hydra. And it's like a virus that's infecting everything in our lives. Everything we go through in our daily lives is now infected with the government. Everything you do, everything you touch, the government is has its hands in everything, everywhere. It's not the job of the government to do this. Okay, we've got another caller here. We'll just go ahead and put him on. He took off, didn't he? All right, 347-308-8790. 347-308-8790. Yeah.
I don't know what's with these folks. Are they shy tonight, Scout?
Oh, I don't know. But like I said, I will just sit here and rant about it. But that's going to get boring. So you guys, I've already asked a question on things I'd like to hear, and Sam, of course, he responded with it. And that one of the one thing that I wanted you guys to call in about was, if you talk to your local law enforcement about this, or really anybody, if you talk to your reps about it, your state reps or your national reps, or if you talk to local law enforcement about it, because I'd like to hear what the temperature is on this in your local areas, because that's important. It's important to know what's going to happen or how things are going to go down. In the case of the government trying to circumvent the Constitution and enforce laws which are in contradiction to the Constitution. Now, I know that there was a letter from one of the South Carolina, I don't remember which county it was, but one of the counties, there was an open letter from the Attorney General who was talking about how he was advising the law enforcement not to get between the government and the things that they were going to do, that the government had an already established right to supersede the states, which I certainly don't believe at all. But he believes that, and because the Attorney General has already written this open letter, and that's a very strong indication of how things are going to be handled to come before it. That means that if you were a county sheriff and you did not have the backing of the Attorney General, then he may decide to prosecute you. And we hope that folks are strong enough or determined enough that they're willing to risk that. But you know what? You know, we're talking about one guy. We're talking about one guy with a family to feed and possibility of going to jail. That's a pretty tough thing to think about. It's a pretty tough position to put yourself in and be all and you're all lonely out there at the end of the point of the spear. Knowing that your Attorney General is not going to back you up is in a rough position. I think that it would certainly behoove us as citizens to ensure that our law enforcement has already thought about what they're going to do. And that was the whole point of our discussion a couple of weeks ago with Stuart Rhodes from Oath Keepers. And of course, the question always comes up, which is,
what is Oathkeepers doing that is an active program other than getting people to sign their names on a list? And believe me, I actually thought the same way in the beginning because I was thinking, that's nice. So what they're doing is great. I'm all for it. But I want to stay with a program that has an active mission like Appleseed. And I still do. I still do run, push the active mission of Appleseed. And I always will. But the thing that Stuart and Oathkeepers are doing that is an active thing isn't the ceremony of signing the person's name, of taking the oath and signing the name. It's not the physical part of it there. It's the mental part of it. It's like the 4A and 4B. The physical part is the person giving the pledge or giving the oath, which is their oath, which they've already given as law enforcement, and that is or military, and that is to defend our rights, defend the Constitution of the United States. The physical part is them giving their oath and signing the pledge. Okay? But the middle part is making them think about it beforehand. Making them think about what they're going to do if something like that happens. Because I can tell you that it's no different. It's no different than say you're a concealed carry permit holder, and you are carrying your firearm, and then all of a sudden you're in a situation. You walk into a store, and you're in a situation where the bad guy has. You're in the back of the store, and the bad guy has his gun on the clerk, and he's telling him he's going to kill him. He's going to kill him if he doesn't give him the money. And the clerk says, I can't open the safe. And the guy's saying, then I'm going to kill you. I'm going to count to three, then I'm going to kill you. What are you going to do? You're there in the store. He can't see you, but you're there. You got your gun. You can take it out. You can have it in your hand pointing at him before he knows anything. And if need be, but even without warning, and I'm not telling you to do this. I'm just saying you could that something like this could happen. You could shoot the person without any warning. You could just draw your weapon and fire without any warning. And well, I'm not going to tell you it's going to be a righteous shooting because, once again, it doesn't matter what anybody tells you, anytime you do anything like that, you have to go before a grand jury or something, you're rolling the dice, right? But you have a responsibility to your fellow man to do something. But here's the hard part about this, is that if you have not thought about this beforehand, if you have not thought about this in your mind and made the decision on what you're going to do, then you may not make the right decision, or by the time you get to the decision to take your firearm out of its concealed position and do something, bang, you already shot and killed the guy. So even if you shoot him now, doesn't do the guy that got killed any good, other than retribution, which he doesn't know anything about anyway, because he's dead. So my point is, if you haven't thought about what you're going to do beforehand, waiting until something happens for you to figure it out isn't that great of an idea. As a concealed, as a licensed concealed carry person, if you're going to go places with your firearm on you, I think that you should have already thought about what you're going to do when a situation like this comes up. And listen, I'm not telling you to do anything one way or the other. You're either a person that's going to do something or you're not.
whenever you hear the robbery going down, you may be the person that backs up into a corner and hunkers down and calls 911, and you make sure that you take a good look at the person's face and how tall they are, what they're wearing, all that kind of stuff, so that you can be a good witness. And if that's what you can do, then that's what you can do. But if you haven't thought about it beforehand, then you need to, then you're going to get to a bad place. So you have to think about it beforehand. You have to think, all right, so I come to the store and I see this, here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to set everything down. I'm going to draw my weapon. I'm going to be taking aim at the person as I'm moving forward. I'm going to stay out of his line of sight. I'm going to stay on his weak side, and I'm moving to position, and I'm going to yell out to drop it, and if the firearm starts traversing toward me, I'm going to pop him 3, 4, 5 times until he's down. I'm going to make sure that when I'm moving up to into position to do this, that I'm clearing my line of fire, that I'm making sure that I'm not going to be there, so that that I'm in a direct straight line that runs from me to the robber to the clerk. I want to make sure that I have my angles figured out, so that I'm the clerk is going to be safe on a through and through shot, or other people in the store, whatever. These are the things that you're going to figure out beforehand. Here's what I'm going to do, so that when it happens, you don't have to think about it. You immediately go into action. You immediately do it. That's what I'm talking about, that's what Stuart's doing. He's putting this idea into the minds of folks, and they are thinking about it. And I'm sure most of them are thinking about it. Once a thought goes into your head, it's an active thought. You don't have to try and reach out and access it and try and figure it out or try to drag it out to think about it. Every time you hear something on the radio or on TV or in the memo that looks like it is going against constitutional law,
well, it looks like Scout got cut off here. Had one of those little burps on the air. What he was talking about was every time you spot something that you think is unconstitutional, you need to call on it. You need to call those congressmen, those senators, and you make sure you let them know what you think constitutional is, because that's our constitution, a limit on them, not their constitution, rules for us to go by. So you need to get involved, stay involved, make the calls, no matter how futile it seems, no matter how bad it thinks you're banging your head on the wall, you need to be out there every day, sending that little 37-cent postcard, making that phone call. You've got all those unlimited airtime minutes. Use them for something besides talking with your girlfriend or trying to scrounge ammunition. Get on the phone, call that Congress critter, call that editor of the local newspaper and tell him, hey, are you going to cover this story where we're being robbed of our rights, our God-given constitutionally protected rights? You need to be in there. I see we got Scout back on. I'll let him put his dime's worth in now.
Well, you're doing a great job. I'm not even going to mention. I'm just going to get going on. I don't know why they keep dropping me. We got a caller on, though, who wants to talk. And this is Callan. Callan, welcome to the show.
Yeah. Hey, Scout. Yeah, I'll call in. I've been calling pretty regularly. I like to give other folks a chance. But, you know, I really want to talk a little more about what Sam had to say. I completely agree that not all of these statements from various law enforcement departments, typically sheriff's departments or sheriff's organizations, are the same. And I've read a number of them, if not all of them, that I can ferret out online. And there's an awful lot of doublespeak in those things, you know. And I think it is essential to ask them specific questions to find out, you know, where they stand. You know, the way I look at it is, you know, they're already quote unquote supporting and enforcing unconstitutional infringements on gun rights. They have been since 1934. I mean, that's you know, that's what Sheriff Mack says, and I agree with him. So what makes us think that this is going to be any different here in the future? You know?
Well, I think one of the things that's different is just that they are finally waking up. Because if you listen to Sheriff Mack, you hear him talk about his history and how he got involved in what he's doing and how he became a representative for sheriffs. Is he was just one of the law enforcement officers tapped to do the duty of backing up the feds when they were going to try and push unconstitutional laws. And the majority of the folks that were sitting there didn't like it. I think he said that almost all of none of them liked it, but they all just kind of shook their heads and said, well, you know, I guess we'll have to do what they're saying, except for Sheriff Mack. He said, no, we're not going to do this. I'm not going to do it. And he fought it. He got all the way to the Supreme Court, and he won. That's why there's not Brady 2 and Brady 3 and Brady 4. Because Sheriff Mack said that that they had the continuing series of Brady laws, I think all the way up to either 7 or 11 or something like that, and they were stopped. They were stopped in their tracks by him. So getting the sheriffs to think about it is one of the things that we need to do. That we can do, and that we need to do, is make sure that they're getting before there. You can get the information from the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers organization, and I would download the information or just send it in the email to the Sheriff's Department. You can look up your Sheriff's Department. There's an email usually for the majority of them for the sheriff himself. And send him the email, asking if he'll read it.
Right. One historical event that I find relevant to this discussion is the Nuremberg trials. The trials held that the Gestapo, the SS, other members of the Third Reich were criminal in not exercising their own judgment, in simply following orders, doing their job. You know, the problem with those findings is, for some reason or other, our society has forgotten that result of the Nuremberg trials. And I think that's a very relevant piece of history, as is some other rhetorical questions that arise. I've mentioned one of them here on the show in the past. You know, had the Jews held the means to fire on the SS and the Gestapo, the Nazis that were lawfully dispatched to round them up, should they have? Should Japanese Americans have done so under the American Franklin Delano Roosevelt regime of World War II when they were rounded up and put in internment camps?
Right, and I think that's one of the things that people don't realize, or they don't think about, is when they think about this, they think about their rights being rock solid, and that can never happen in the United States. Well, it has happened. We rounded up our citizens. We put them in internment camps. You're right, we did. They lost everything. We put them in internment camps at the point of a gun, and treated them like criminals. American citizens, we did this too.
Yeah, don't think that we're beyond that today. People somehow, because they have normalcy bias, or, you know, their life is felt reasonably just and fair to them, they don't see these as possibilities. They're suffering from normal bias. We're not different today, you know. And furthermore, the concept of gun rights and the concept of a right to life are closely related. In fact, they're tied at the waist. So we are not that far away from things that people think can never happen again. It's just
well, a lot of people don't even realize that that did happen because
right. You
know it's not a pretty part of American history, and
mm-hmm. It's
very seldom is that really taught because nobody wants to talk about it. So, but it can happen, and there's people that still remember that happening. So.
Yeah.
So it's happened in their lifetime, in our historical lifetime, because there are people alive right now that went through being put in internment camps. American citizens that went through being put in internment camps. So they don't think that it can happen, guys. It can. I'm not saying that it will. I'm just saying that everyone thinks they don't have to worry about safeguarding their rights and freedoms. They've always had these rights. They always will have them. But that's not the case. I mean, you have to be vigilant. You have to make sure that you're paying attention to the things that are going on around you. And you have to make sure that you're paying attention to the laws that are being passed, what they are, why. And I know, guys, believe me, whenever I first started this, I was thinking, oh, my gosh, the last thing I want to do is go to my congressman's webpage and start going through the laws and start reading them because it's like reading the phone book sometimes. You know, it's very difficult. You got to get up early in the morning, have some coffee, and get a fast run at it to do it because – otherwise, you're going to get bogged down in it, and you're going to make it something you don't want to do. But you have to do it. You have to read and familiarize yourself with things that are coming up. And when I say read and familiarize yourself, I don't mean read the emails and read what people are saying. I just saw some emails and some posts some emails about stuff that is not only is it wrong, it's wrong, and it's like 15 years old. So when I say read and familiarize, I don't mean to go to your email account and read and say, "Oh my gosh, the president is giving foreign police officers more power than they could ever have." And then hurriedly forwarding that on to everybody you know. Talking about, if you see that, then you go and read. Read where it came from. If they don't tell you where it is, look it up. It only takes, with modern-day Google, it only takes about 15, 20 seconds to start wading through the 1 million returns you'll get from whatever you Google. And find out the truth about it. Find out what's really happening to us right now, because we are in a very precarious position, all right? And I don't think that we're on. I don't think that we're going down the drain, but I think that we're in a very dangerous place. I think that you need to be aware of that, and then I think you need to make others aware of it.
Yeah. Before I leave this week, I'd like to mention one other resource that I've used and quoted some of the materials and some of the educational information that's available on their site, and that's the 10th Amendment Center. The 10th Amendment Center, just a lot of really interesting information and some of it quite useful in letters to sheriffs and sheriff's departments. It gets back to what you were saying that, there are various levels of sovereignty, and quite often the buck doesn't stop at the Supreme Court. So, the Lincoln administration, despite what Obama says, was not the final word.
So. Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, according to Chris Rock, we have to do what Obama says because he's our daddy.
Yeah.
And you got to do what your daddy says. And that is the level that that we apparently have sank down to. The president is our daddy, and we have to do what our daddy says. So, and I agree with you. The 10th Amendment Center has a lot of great information about our rights, and you can also read about jury nullification, because that is another answer that we have to some specific problem. Because, and of course, the courts hate it when you start talking about jury nullification, because it completely circumvents what they're trying to do, and that is that as a jurist, if you think, regardless of what the law says, regardless of any instructions that you've been given, if in your heart, if you think that this is an unconstitutional enforcement of the law, then you can nullify it by not convicting the person, by the jury not convicting the person. So,
yeah, another good resource. Thanks for mentioning that. Yeah, FIJA, Fully Informed Jurors Association. Is that a .org, I guess? A lot of good information. Speaking as a former jurist, I can tell you, you really need to read their materials if you want to be effective, because you got to, in jury selection, you may have to play your cards wisely and close to your chest.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. And it's not any kind of a perfect answer. I'm just saying that it's another thing that you have as a power, and that is the power to nullify. Now, there's a bunch of other folks that are even on the jury, and you're just one of them. But if you're in a trial as a jurist, and you think that a law is unconstitutional, then it's certainly, I would think it would be your duty to nullify your decision on this, and that's certainly up to you to do that. But
now, can't just one dissenting juror hang a jury on a felony charge?
Yes, that's normally the case. And now, that's not saying that they can't keep trying them, that they can't keep going, because their prosecutors will do that. They'll say, "We'll just keep going. We'll keep going until we find a jury that will convict them."
Right.
And that's certainly the case. But I'm telling you, if enough people did this, then they wouldn't be able to do that, you know, because the state only has so much money, and the feds, of course, have all of the money because you make it for them. The state only has so much money, and
they make it for the. They also are quite handy at making it for themselves, Scout.
Yeah, you're right. You know, the other day last week, I think I was talking about that thing. The government has no money and no ability to make any money, and I thought about that right after I said it, and then I go, huh, that's a lie.
Yeah,
because
you got
the presses running night and day right now.
Yeah.
So they can make it as much as they want, and of course, to me, I look at that and I think, you got to ask the question of, why do we have to pay taxes then? If the government can make the money, then just make enough.
It's to maintain the facade.
Make enough that you don't have, they don't have to take any taxes out anymore.
Right.
And the government says, don't worry about it. We can make the money. We can print up the money. We can cover this. And let's just go. Let's go for broke. Let's make enough that we don't have to pay for taxes.
Well,
it's no different than making the minimum wage, raising it, making it $9. Hell, man, if you're gonna make it something, and you can arbitrarily make it any wage you want, let's pay him $50 an hour. Let's make
the power.
Everybody gets paid $50 an hour. And then that will stimulate the economy, right? Because everybody will be making a lot of money. They can buy stuff. That's the way that a lot of people think. Because the government has it. They'll just use the government money, and then we'll make it a law that they have to pay them $50 an hour. So perfect.
You see them on YouTube all the time. I love this government program. There should be free iPhones and TVs for everyone.
Absolutely.
It's it's all the same train of thinking, you know.
If there's not enough money, well, let's build a couple of more treasuries. Let's build a couple more printing presses. What people don't understand is every time you jack with that minimum wage like that, it doesn't magically get everybody more. The majority of times, what happens is you're the employer says, "I got to let the three of you go because I got to start paying this amount." That means I only have this amount in my budget for employees, so I got to let three of you go. So, all right.
Yeah.
Well, you got anything else?
No, that's all for this week. You know, I'm going to try to make it most weeks and chat from time to time. Thanks much.
All right, take care. God bless you, brother.
Yep, you too.
Hey, Scott, we've got Ed Heller down on that bottom line down there, like to talk. But
I
only
see him
on
down there.
One
I
little trying, point.
I was trying to ignore him, but now you pointed him out to me. Hey, Ed, welcome to the show.
Hey, Scott, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. It's economics is a favorite subject of mine, but I'll stay off of that for the time being. What I wanted to bring up was I think we need to start thinking about, you know, at Appleseeds we like to talk about the old time phone tree kind of setup that they had. You know, the alert, the way that the citizens alerted each other to, you know, when the regulars were out. And it might be time for us to start thinking about, you know, we have a lot of modern means of notifying each other that things are happening and that, you know, maybe we should start actually forming an actual phone tree.
Well, people have been doing that. There's a lot of folks doing that. Matter of fact, one of our own folks here in Texas has started up a site for Texas. It's called don't make me lie. Now I can't think of the name. Mark, if you're listening, can you post that into the chat room? The name. Rachel Malone started up a site, and one of the things it does is you can sign up for the information, and it'll send you out the information on firearms. I believe it's a firearms freedom organization. It sends out information on what the government is doing. Anytime the government is considering any type of action on firearms, then it will send out a note to it. And then if there's something specific that comes up, then they'll send out an alert to all the folks. And if you have somebody that's willing to do this, then that's great, because then you don't have to take the time to try and wade through the stuff. You've got somebody who's watching it, and they can send you the information. And I believe that's what you're talking about, right?
I'm being actually a little bit more specific. It's getting to know your neighbors, getting to know, you know, having the phone numbers of everybody, you know, having a means of, you know, getting information out, not necessarily what our government is doing, because we know they're doing awful things, and they're going to continue to do awful things. But if you think about it, we're getting to the point where who knows where we are historically, you know, in reference to what the Founding Fathers went through. But maybe it's time for us to start considering about, you know, thinking maybe we have to have that actual phone tree with actual people in your area so that if you ever had to defend your liberty, that, you know, you can make that tree, you know, and raise the 20,000 people. You know, we talk about it, how many people can you raise when you're at an Appleseed, and, you know, you start back at 14,000, you know, 10,000, 1,000, you know, 100. And most people are like, yeah, I couldn't get 10 people to come out to do anything, you know, let alone risk themselves. And maybe
if you get 10 people, man, I would think that you were some kind of a cult leader or something if you could get 10 people, because you can't anymore. I guess I understand what you're saying now in a better sense, and I completely agree, because I think it raises the same kind of questions that we were talking about earlier, the way that Stuart was talking about Stuart Rhodes with Oath Keepers, talking about making people, getting the law enforcement officers and stuff to think about it now, so that so they could have a decision formed on how they're going to act when it happens. That's the same thing with getting the people locally to start thinking about it, because I can guarantee you the majority of the people that you ask about this or inform about this or try to get involved, the majority are not going to, they're not going to be informed. And they may be so ignorant of it that they would think that a full-blown breach of the Constitution would be okay. It behooves you to go and, like you're saying, have some meetings with folks and talk to your neighbor and your community about it so that they understand what's going on. Because if you don't talk to them about it and something happens, and of course it would be like I'll just say one of the folks, like the Appleseed folks, that have, they may have 5 to 10 Ruger 10-22s as loaners. They may have 20,000 rounds of 22 long rifle, and just hearing a dozen or two dozen firearms and 20,000 rounds of ammunition makes it sound like you're a domestic terrorist.
Oh, you have an arsenal.
Yeah, you've got an arsenal and a stockpile, an illegal stockpile of ammunition. When in reality, if you told them, look, here's what I do. I'm a volunteer. I devote my time to teaching American citizens the fundamental of the rifle marksmanship and American heritage and history. That's what I do with this. And then everybody goes, okay. Then why are y'all bothering him? Why are y'all giving him a hard time? He's one of us. He's part of the community. Y'all stop. Y'all leave him alone. And, you know, come on, everybody. Let's help him. Now, I'm not
exactly
saying they're going to do that because they normally won't. But that's that's my explanation of it.
And we're not going to wake everyone up, not even a small fraction. But, you know, just by doing this, you're going to start to get to know your neighbors. You get to start to know the people that are in your area, you know, probably better than you have now. And
right,
there is nothing but good that can come from that. Because if things go pear-shaped, then you know the people to talk to. You're not a stranger knocking on their door and they're scared because, you know, things have gone strange.
Right, exactly. Ed, stay on the line. I'm going to bring another caller on while we're sitting here talking. This is Craig. Craig, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going? I just had a quick question for you, and it was where I can get more information about contacting and what actually to say and what documentation to give to my representatives when I go to call them and to go forward with issues like that.
Okay, well, first of all, if you're going to – just to find out how to contact them, it's real easy. Just go to go to Google and just put in find my senator or find my congressman, because they have a direct link. It will take you straight to the congressional page that's actually named find my congressman or find my senator. And then you just plug in your zip code, and it takes you straight to all of your reps. You can do the same thing for your state, too. It will take you to all of your reps, and then the rep pages will have their phone numbers and their physical addresses and their emails. Normally, your state reps or your national reps will have, they'll have a lot of different offices. They'll have one local to where they're representing, and usually they'll have maybe even two offices in their represented area, and then they'll have a Washington office, and they'll all be staffed, and they'll all be folks on the phone at all of the places. Now, you won't talk to your rep usually, unless it's just a complete accident, because they don't have time for that. And in a lot of cases, you know, it's you're better off not even talking to your rep, okay? But you will talk to a staffer. Now, when you talk to them, make sure that you have already been informed, that you've already done your research, and you have...
And that's what I'm more of looking for is, I know that you guys have, you know, the different packets that you've been sending out. Where can I go to find, like, some of the packets have already been pre-put together for, I guess, my information for my own background into this.
Okay, run that by me again.
I guess I'm looking for, like, some of the same information that's been handed out, you know, to the local sheriff's offices for the, you know, are you going to support this, yes or no, let us know so that we can either oust you or recall you on April 19th,
okay.
That leaves the date. That way so I can get all the information, actually have a good, you know, a good packet to send them so that it looks cleaner, more professional, and it's taken more seriously than anything else.
Well, I don't know that there's not any, like, one-stop shopping for it, as far as I know. Usually I'll go to, first you'll go to, if there's something that you're specifically looking for, because they have some type of legislation that's in the pipeline. And, of course, first, you know, you're going to read the legislation and find out what it is, what it affects. And then you can go to your state. Now, if you're talking about, like, 2A stuff, like Second Amendment stuff, the first place I'd go is to my state rifle organization to find out what their stance is on it. You can go to the NRA, but I would go to my state rifle association first. Texas has the TSRA, the Texas State Rifle Association, and they are actually really rock solid on the business end of keeping up with the politics and then doing a great job of defending our rights on the state level and on the national level. But you can go to your state rifle association. You can go to the National Rifle Association, and of course, when you do that, read it with a grain of salt. Make sure that you're taking the information. You're taking the information that they're giving you. You can put this together. You probably have to put it together yourself, unless it's something, one specific thing, and then you might be able to get packets on it from either your state rifle association or the NRA or something like that. And then put it together yourself in a letter and outline your case on why this should be a deal or why it shouldn't, and then either send it in by either email or snail mail, or give the reps a call and outline what you want to them. And it can't be a long rambling thing. It needs to be very short, very concise, and that's all it needs to be, because in the end, you're asking them to do one thing, either vote yes or vote no. So it needs to be sharp and concise, and every time I've dealt with the folks, the person has usually been pretty proficient at writing down the points I was making, because usually what I'll do when I'm talking to them, I'll stop and I'll say, are you getting this? And they'll go, yeah. And I said, okay, well, what was I saying about X, Y, Z? And they'll take a second and say, okay, you said this, you know, this about this and this about this. So I check them to see if they're paying attention, because I want them to give an accurate report of what I said to my rep. And usually they do a really good job of writing it down. Other than the other day, I was talking to one of the new guys, one of the interns or something, because I was talking to my state rep's staff member, and I gave my discussion on how I wanted Congressman Flores, what I would like him to do to represent me. And at the end of it, at the end of my 10-minute outline, the guy guy. It sounded like a young guy. He said, "Oh, okay, so let me get this straight. Are you saying you're for gun control or against it?" And I just stopped. I said, "Okay, listen, I'm going to need to talk to whoever the head of the office is there. Make sure that they're paying attention, because if they're not, it's not doing any good." But normally, like I said, once I got the office manager on the line, she paid attention to everything I said, because then whenever I started backing up and asking her what I said on something, she had the notes there. So that's what I think that's – and Kaylin and I talked about this last week, and he doesn't think it helps, but I'm telling you, it is there's a combat. We can't just count on a one-trick pony. We've got to make sure that our efforts, you know, are comprehensive, and that includes signing some kind of document that says, I will not be disarmed, and sending it in, and that's good. But I'm telling you, even better than that is making sure that your reps know what your needs are and the things that you consider deal breakers. Because I also made sure that they knew this. And I told you guys this before. You know, I told at the end of my conversation, I said, I just want you to understand that for me, that this single item is going to be a deal breaker. If no matter how well he does on everything else, if he feeds the multitudes, you know, with one loaf and five fish, it doesn't matter, because if he fails to do this, then it's a deal breaker, and then I'll vote for whoever is opposing him, no matter what letter comes in front of them, no matter if the person that is running against him says from day one that I am here to ensure that all firearms are outlawed, I'm still going to vote for that person. Because how can that person be any worse than what just happened? How can that person be any worse than my representative, regardless of what letter's in front of his name? If he sells me down the river, how's it going to be any worse? How's the next guy going to be any worse? And you can make sure that they understand that, and make sure that when you do it, it's got to all be nice and polite. No cursing and no yelling at them, because they don't have anything to do with it. You know, they don't. All they're doing is listening to you, and they don't. And once you start getting rowdy, they don't have to listen to you anymore. They can hang up on you, and that's no good. So make sure that it's short, concise. That you have all the points that you want to make researched, and you can deliver them in a non-rambling way. And I think that'll work. Is that an answer to the question you're asking?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah, because I'm looking for information, I guess, against the U.S. being able to do drone strikes on U.S. citizens. And I want to find as much information as I can to put together, to send out there, and, you know, pretty much just say, hey, guys, if you're one of the ones who participated in this, saying, yes, it's okay for the president or whomever to have this, you know, judge, jury, sentencing ability, this is not acceptable. This goes against everything in the Constitution. We need to correct this immediately and get this removed.
Well, there's a ton of information right now out there on this. And there is a ton of, there's a ton of information because, right before I came on the show, I was reading an article about San Marcos, Texas, having a drone there, and I didn't finish the article because I just come in from working on the speed wall for the shooting event we have coming on, and I didn't have time to read it. But you can see where they're, I want to make sure people understand this isn't something that. That our government is thinking about maybe doing. It's what they're already doing. You are already under surveillance, not just by satellite, but by drones and everything else. And the drones that you're under surveillance by are the same drones that the same types of drones that are deployed in the Middle East. Is the only difference is that, as far as I know, and I could be wrong, but as far as I know, most of these are not weaponized. That is not to say that they couldn't be weaponized probably in a couple of hours. But it's already something that's going on. They're already flying them here. So,
I just thought I'd mention on that. I was at an Appleseed this past summer, and I looked up, and in the sky there was a Global Hawk. I completely lost my sense of everything and just stared at it flew across the sky. I was like, because it's very distinctive shaped drone. There's this
right.
big bulbous front end, and it's hard to mistake. You know, and other people, you know, ended up going, "What are you looking at?" And then I just pointed up at it, and they're like, "Okay, plane." And I was like, "No, that's not a plane." So sorry.
Yeah, well, that's what most people think. They just think it's an airplane.
I tell you, there's
a ton of information out there. If you want, you can send me a PM and a more detailed question. And if I can be of any service, I'll be glad to. Are you on the forum?
I am not. Several of my friends are. I just moved to a new state that is probably the worst state I could possibly move to and be a gun lover.
What is it?
California.
Well, listen, California's not bad because, I mean, it's not good, but it's not bad because it's actually filled up with tons of folks out there that are pro-gun. It's just, they're just not as vocal as the anti-gun folks. Well, I can give you my email. It's RWVA, Romeo Whiskey Victor Alpha, Range Scout, all one word, lowercase, RWVA Range Scout at gmail.com.
Got it.
Okay, so you can send me an email and ask me more specific about what you want. I'll be glad to help you if I can, or push you towards some of the sites that I frequent that could possibly help you in your quest for this information. And this is what I'm talking about, guys. The stuff that Craig is talking about doing. And there's nothing wrong with this. And that's picking. You don't have to say, okay, let me go down the list because I've got to figure out every law, every bill, my stance on it. You can start with just one thing. You can say, okay, I got one thing that I'm going to do, and I'm going to figure it out, and I'm going to take it to its conclusion. And knowing something like that, like with drones or something, is that's a good place to start. So, Craig, great job.
Thank you. Have a good night, gentlemen.
All right. Thank you very much, Craig. And Ed, aren't you in California too?
No. I used to live in California a number of years ago, but I'm in Pennsylvania now. California there's a lot of guns that are perfectly legal in California. I hope when he traveled there, he didn't take any old magazines or anything, because that's pretty not good. Although it's perfectly legal to own all the parts, and you can disassemble your magazine. So, anyway, California has a lot of interesting things.
Right. What about what's going on with the Pennsylvania now?
Well, we have a number of bills that are in process. We have a bill that's going that is like a lot of other states that I forget the. I had this all written down, but my computer is not immediately in front of me at this moment.
Well, Pennsylvania is pretty dang good compared to most of the neighbors that you're surrounded by. I mean, Pennsylvania.
Anything north and east of us is usually pretty bad, and Maryland to the south isn't the greatest. Yeah, we have pretty good laws, so far as firearms. We do have that, the freedom law that a whole bunch of states have proposed, directing that, if the feds would try to enforce their rules, that it would be a felony. That's going through our legislature right now. That's the one I was trying to think of. But we are also on the other end of the state, there is Philadelphia, which is a heavily Democratic area, right next to New Jersey and Maryland and all of that, where they're trying to, we also have bills proposed for, our own gun control. It's a lot less likely to happen in Pennsylvania right now because both the House and the Senate are both in Republican hands, as well as the governor's office. So we're hopeful that we don't have to worry about this, but that doesn't mean that you don't contact your reps every chance you get, because otherwise they might forget and compromise.
Right, and that's right, and I know a lot of people say it's not, but I'm telling you, it is, because as a citizen. A lot of times you feel like you don't have any power, like you're powerless, like you can't do anything. But I'm telling you, the congressmen, the senators, they don't fear an armed uprising because, that's no different, I think, in their minds. And most of us usually thinking about, an asteroid, the big asteroid coming. That's something that we don't think about a whole lot. But, it could happen, but the chances are pretty remote. The same thing with the armed deterrence of Americans. The congressmen and senators don't fear the armed deterrence because they have an army and they've got drones and everything else. They don't fear that. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and they have plenty of minions to do their bidding.
Exactly. Yeah, so that's not what they fear. What they fear is that somebody will take the keys to the golf cart. Somebody will take away their golf junkets. Somebody will take away their feather bed, their gold plated health care, or their lifetime pensions. That's what they fear. They fear losing their power. Once somebody like that has the power that is given to a lawmaker, then they become addicted to it, and that's what they want to keep. They want to keep that power. Even if it means compromising on stuff, they want to keep that power. What can you do to bend them to your will is to make sure that you let them know that you're watching them. I'm watching you. I'm watching what you're doing, and it's going to have an effect on how I vote. And I'm going to make sure that I'm telling you this because I'm a person of my word, and I'm telling you that XYZ is a deal breaker, or that if this is not done to my satisfaction, that I'm going to follow through on this, and I'm going to vote against you, and I'm going to get as many of my friends and relatives to do the same. That will keep them awake at night much more than if you call them up and said, I've got a hunting rifle aimed in your window right now. They're not going to worry about that. They're going to take care of you if you did something like that. If you did something illegal like that, they'll have you arrested and everything else. But that's not going to worry them as much as you saying that you're going to take away their power and their prestige. And eliminate them. So,
if you really want to get their attention, you don't call them up on the phone. You don't send them a fax. You don't send them an email. You don't even write them a physical letter. You call up you call them up, and you ask for their scheduler, and you tell them that you want to make an appointment to talk with them face to face. And what you're probably going to hear is, no, we don't have any room on the schedule. So, and when you politely hang up and everything, and then you call back the next day, and the day after that, until the scheduler says, I've got to get this guy off my back. Okay. we have 15 minutes on, you know, and they start to make an appointment with you. And then you go and you talk to your representative. They can't ignore you when you're, right, you know, 5 feet away from them.
Right. Right, exactly. Well, I'm glad you said that, because at first I was worried. I was worried with it,
no,
where you were going with it at first.
Nothing bad. I mean, you make an appointment. You go
talk
face-to-face. And,
yeah,
you know,
if there's anything they hate worse than you calling and talking to their rep on the phone or something, it's you holding their heels to the fire in person, you know?
Mm-hmm. And apparently very, very few people ever ask to actually speak with them. 95% of their time is spent with lobbyists and,
right,
you know, organizations and what. They don't talk to their constituents. That apparently happens like an incredibly small amount of the time. So, I mean, if they started getting, you know, lots of their constituents wanting to talk, they're going to sit up and take notice, going, something has changed.
Right. That's an excellent idea, and I'm glad you brought that up. Well, listen, Ed, thank you very much for calling in. I'm glad you decided to call and talk this time. I know that usually you don't, but you did a great job tonight, so thank you very much.
I'll talk to you later, Scott.
All right, thank you. All right, well, there you got a bunch of great ideas now on what we need to do. We got a few minutes left, and what I'd like to do is I'd like to bring on my business partner, Mark Martinez. You guys know him, and I'd like to bring him on and talk about the event that we have coming up, not this weekend, but next weekend. It's I'm going to let Mark tell you about it. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
It's going, brother. Tell everybody what we have going and why they should come.
I certainly will, but before I do that, you know, I listen to a lot of radio shows, and people call in, and the first thing they do is ask the host, how are you doing? And you can tell the host says it all day long, so I said, you know, whenever I call these guys, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to go right into the subject, and the first thing I ask you, how are you doing, Mike? I talk to you every day anyhow, so...
Yeah, I don't have any problem with that. It never bothered me. I know what you're talking about because I hear that too. They say, how's it going? And, it doesn't bother me at all. All right, so we got an event coming up, and what exactly are we doing again now? Because I forgot.
Well, we are having our zombie destruction run, and this course is going to be approximately 3.5 miles. And when I've been talking to people about this course, and explaining what it is, a lot of folks right off the bat think it's a three-gun competition or something to that effect, where what we're doing is not. We are running an actual biathlon, which means you're going to have your rifle, your pistol, your ammo, your water, whatever gear you want to take with you, and you have to carry it. You probably need a vest or some type of go bag, and you're going to take off running. The course will be marked. And there's going to be 7 shooting stations, 4 pistol, 3 rifle. And we'll have a nice wooded area that's going to have several zombie-shaped targets, too. I believe all our targets are going to be steel, so we'll get some, you know, shooter will get feedback. And you just run through the course and see how you do. I know there's going to be a lot of folks out there who are going to take off running and push themselves to their limits. I know quite a few folks are going to go out there and probably jog a little, walk a little, maybe walk the whole thing, and that's good because they've set their own personal goals, and that's perfectly fine. So when we say zombie run, it's also a zombie whatever. Zombie, you want to walk it, you want to wait a few minutes and walk it with your friend, you can do that too.
Right.
And looking on my phone, I've seen all the pictures you've been sending me, and it looks like you've been pretty busy on it as well.
Yeah, I still got a long way to go. When you get here this weekend, you'll see. I don't want you to don't be freaked out because there's still quite a bit to do. I was working on the speed wall today, and that's one of the things that we're going to have, folks, is one of the shooting positions is what's called a speed wall, and that's where you've got a like a long wall. I mean, actually made this one fairly long. First, it was supposed to be 30 feet, and I started looking at it. I go, I don't know, man. I want more than that. So I ended up making it, I think, 55 feet. And then it has different things. Like every 5 or 6 feet, the scenery right in front of you changes. Like it'll start off in almost like in a fenced-in like prison compound with barbed wire and chain link and stuff like that. And you got to figure out how to make a shot through that. There's some holes in the chain link and stuff where you can get your rifle and your optics to see through that. And you make the shots on your target there. And as soon as you do, as soon as the rain drops tell you made the hit, and you move on to the next position. It might be a big stack of firewood that has the wood arranged in such a way that there are ways to shoot through the firewood and get your target. Now, it's not going to be comfortable. You may have to lay on your weak side and hold your rifle up a certain way or something like that, but it's doable. And like Mark was saying, this isn't like an IDPA thing or three gun. This isn't where you've got your tight leather pants on and you know, you've got all your sharp gear and everybody's filming you and you've got your hair done in a salon before you came. This is, we made this specifically so that folks, that even if you haven't ever done any kind of competition before, even if you're new to shooting, if you came to an Appleseed and you shot like in the 180s, 190s, then you're good. You're usually pretty good to go. Well, you've got pistol too, but you'll be good to go on this. We made it a way for you to test yourself and for you to figure out your gear. It's only 3.5 miles, but listen, you try walking 3.5 miles with a little bit of a ruck on, your ammunition packed in a certain way and stuff like that, and you'll figure things out quick. Mm-hmm. This last year at Pecos, I said, okay, this year I'm going to carry everything in my belt. So I had a couple of hundred rounds of 223. I had 5 pistol mags for my 45. I had all of them in my belt. And my pants ended up falling down. So now I got to figure out something else. What else, Mark? Tell them about what else we got going on. We got some guys coming out to do demos, right?
Yeah, we do. We have some guys coming out from Tannerite. I know you've been speaking with them a lot more than I have. But I do understand there's going to be a demo when the last person comes across the line. We're probably going to have, I'm guessing maybe an hour and a half, maybe even 2 hours of downtime before all of our scores are tallied up. So during that time, the Tannerite people will be out in our that large pit you have out there, and they're going to be blowing some stuff up for us.
Right, and listen, real quick, I don't want you to go yet, but I'm going to tell everybody that we're about to lose our live feed here in just a second. But Mark and I are going to talk for another couple of minutes, and you'll be able to catch it in the archives. If you want to hear the rest of the stuff we're saying, you can catch it in the archives. You can sign up at www.battleroadusa.com. Go to the website there and for more info or to register, pre-register for the event on Eventbrite, just like you do for Appleseed. And then there's a blog and stuff like that. And if we lose you in the next couple of seconds, then we'll catch you again this next Thursday, right? So God bless everybody. Good night to the live feed, and we're going to continue on for another few minutes here for the archive feed, okay? All right, Mark, go ahead. Yeah,
okay,
I talked to the Tannerite guy. He's going to bring out a bunch of stuff to do demo. I believe he's going to also donate to the prize table for prizes for the runner. And, yeah, we talked about having him do the 45 minutes to an hour of where he's going to do instruction, teach folks how to use that Tannerite and what they can do with it, what they can't do with it. And then he's going to blow some stuff up. And I imagine if he's got a big truck full of it, I bet some of these explosions are going to be pretty big. So, you know, he told me that there's a limit, that you can't mix up over 50 pounds of Tannerite or you get the feds involved. But I'm telling you, even a 20-pound bag of Tannerite will completely remodel a vehicle.
Yeah, certainly. Hey, and while we're talking about some of our sponsors, we have another one out there, roughneckfirearms.com. Those guys have a lot of parts for your AR-15s, cool tactical gear, things like that. I've been talking to one of the guys who owns it, and he's a very much like you and I, Mike. He thinks a lot like we do. And if anybody's out there and needs some parts for their ARs or gun parts, gear, whatever, I'd encourage you to check out roughneckfirearms.com. There's a group of guys out there.
Yeah.
Going back to what you're saying, yeah, I think this run is going to be a lot of fun. I also, you know, when we've been going out to Pecos, when I go to Pecos, I've always gamed it. I take the minimal amount of gear, and I try to go as fast as I can. But I think the zombie run, I don't know why I do that. Every year I always say this is the last year I'm going to do that. But I believe for ours, what I'm going to do is grab the actual gear that I usually carry in my vehicle. This has to be a little modified for what we're doing. But I want to take the stuff that I have, so if for some reason, if my vehicle was to break down or for I can't get home and I have to grab my stuff and go, I want to know what this is going to do. Is it going to rub my neck raw? Is it going to fall apart? Is it going to be real loud? Am I going to make too much noise? So I'm going to be a little more serious with this run here and really check on my gear and see how it's performing.
I think it's a great idea. So that's kind of what I was planning too. And I was actually thinking about doing the same thing that you are, which is a safety ruck that I carry. I carry a small ruck in the vehicle with me whenever I go. If I go outside the county, you know, I take the ruck and the rest of the gear. I've got my in-county travel bag and my out-of-county travel bag. But if I go out of the county, I take a certain ruck. I was going to take that one with me down to the line and do exactly what I would do in a real scenario, and that is open the ruck, dump everything out, put stuff in back in the ruck that I'm actually going to take with me for whatever reason, and then just abandon the rest of it there. I won't really abandon it. I'll one of my kids pick it up. But abandon the rest of it and then take off with that and see how it goes and try the gear out. And, yeah, you do. The last couple times, folks, Mark, he even ran the run last year without any water. And that may not sound like it's too bad. It's like, oh, it's only 6 miles, but it's 6 miles in the desert and it was dry. And I think that when Mark finally crossed the finish line, I think in the 100 yards from the finish line to our vehicle, I think he managed to down about either three or four cold beers in that 100 yards because he had not had any type of liquid in him for the rest of the day. So, I think that you just had what was on your belt, too. And I see you guys doing that. They've got a mag. I mean, they've got their pistol on their hip and maybe one or two mags, because the Pecos round count is real low. And then one or two mags in their pocket for the rifle, and that's it. And they're high-speed, low-drag, which is great. But like you said, I think that this is a great opportunity for folks to try out the gear. It's only 3.5 miles, but I'm telling you, if you've got something wrong on your gear, if you've got it packed wrong, if you're wearing it wrong, 3.5 miles is enough time for you to figure out that it's wrong.
Absolutely, and this is a great, not only a great place to do it, but pretty much where else can you do it? Where can you grab your gear and go off in the woods and follow a line? A lot of times you'll be on your own. You'll be unsupervised until you get to a shooting station with range officers, and you'll get to try out all this stuff. You go to most ranges now, and Lord forbid you draw from your holster or something, or you step off line, you get in trouble, they'll yell at you. And
yeah,
you're going to come out to Central Texas, grab your gear, and take off running in the woods. I mean, where else on the planet can you do this type of stuff? And if you're anywhere
yeah.
near the area, jump on it.
Yeah, and I was telling one of the guys today, I put an ad in the Thrifty Nickel, and it started running today, and I got several calls on this. And I was trying to explain to the guy there, and he said, well, I said that there's going to be some obstacles. I said, yeah, there is, but listen, we've made this so that you get a good test of yourself physically and your skills, your marksmanship skills. But at the same time, I kept in mind that I've been inviting folks like 50-year-old women and stuff like that. That are new to shooting, so that I the way that we design this is so that nothing is so difficult that that it's going to DQ, that it's going to, you know, disqualify you, or it's going to burn you up or anything like that. Everything is just a test. It's a good way to test yourself. But there's nothing. This isn't a Marine Corps boot camp thing. Nobody's going to be pushing you or yelling at you or calling you sissy or anything like that. Everybody's going to be smiling and patting you on the back and telling you what a great job you did. All the shots are, I'm not going to say they're easy, because I was looking at it today going, oh, man, I hope that, because I'm going to be running an AR with iron sights. I'm thinking, oh, man, am I going to be able to see that? Am I going to be able to make a headshot at 100 yards? And I think that we can, because, you know, Appleseed, we're teaching you to shoot down to 4 minutes, and the headshot is 8 minutes. So there should be no problem. There's actually 1 6-minute target. But there shouldn't be any problem for any of you guys, right?
Yeah, 4 minutes is plenty, especially, you know, like you said, you have them out at 100-ish, I guess you could say. I think most people will be fine. Now, I'm glad you're going with irons, Mike. What can I say? I'm going to run up with a little bit of glass this year.
Well, the only reason I'm going with irons is because I don't have any glass yet. The only way I could get some glass would be to take it off some other. Well, you know what? I could do that. I could take one. I've got 6 or 7 other scopes. I guess I could grab one and put it on there sometime this week. But I don't know. I may just try and run it with iron, because that's the way that I usually carry. You know, my rifles are usually iron, because they get a lot of rough treatment. And usually I try not to do that to scopes, because it's, you know, it's just rough on them. But I may go ahead and just run it with iron, because, like I said, the targets that we set up are not going to be difficult. Your longest shot is going to be about 250 yards, and it's on a half D size target. So you're gonna think everybody's gonna be fine, and it's not one of the gray targets like from the AQT. It's going to be a nice, bright, safety orange target that you're going to be having to hit, or safety green fluorescent. And you should be able to have get a good sight picture on it. All of the pistol targets are really pretty decent targets, and none of them are going to be pushed past what you have to do to qualify you for your concealed carry. So everything is going to be pretty decent, but it's still going to be a test. Like I said, don't think that this is all going to be baby stuff, because it's not.
That's right. And also, we have two divisions. We have the target division and the combat ready division. It's the same course. The times will be a little different. The target division, those folks won't have to carry as much ammunition, because they'll be firing one round per target. And we came up with that because of this big ammo crunch we're going through right now, and some people just don't have, or they're having a hard time finding ammunition for the course. And then you have other people like us who probably had a lot of ammo just piled up someplace, and we're good to go, and we're going to run the combat division, and that's going to be roughly 5 rounds per target. So it's a higher round count, which means you're going to carry more weight. And that was the whole intent when we were talking about this course, Mike, was to help show people how fast ammunition goes, so maybe they might want to carry a little more. And the big thing was magazines. If you only have magazines that came with the gun you bought, you really need to get some more. A lot of people are finding that out right now. You know, we came up with this course or this idea a year ago, way before most of this stuff or all this stuff happened. So the magazines were out there, and that's what we're talking about. How do we get people to burn through all their ammunition and see, hey, 3 magazines, that's not going to cut it. And, now it's a little tougher. I think we're going to be okay in the long run. The magazines will be back again. But until then, I guess some folks may just have to carry some boxes of ammunition in a bag with them and reload in between shooting stations.
Yeah, do your prep while you're on your march from one station to the next. And like you said, that was the point of this, is that in our classes, we don't teach people things like double tap and stuff like that. We teach them the Battle Road USA philosophy, which is you're going to shoot until the threat is neutralized. And Sometimes that's more than one or two or three or four rounds. And like Mark was saying, you know, if you got into a position where you had to use your rifle to defend yourself or your loved ones or something, you might find that the ammunition goes fairly quick. So what are you going to do? How are you going to deal with that? And that's one of the reasons that we decided to do this, plus the fact that we just like to shoot. And I know I was complaining to Mark about driving all the way out to West Texas to shoot however many rounds we were shooting at the Pecos running gun, because that had a pretty low round count. And So we set this one up, and it meant that you're going to have to actually carry a good amount of ammunition. Make sure, too, when you look at the round counts, remember that the round counts, the number of rounds that we're giving you there is if you hit that target every time you're supposed to. It's not that you just have to fire one round at the station. You've got to fire one round onto a target, or you've got to keep shooting until you hit the target one time. So make sure that whenever you're looking at your round count, you've got that in mind, so that you're probably going to have to bring some buffer ammunition. Make sure that you've got enough to cover what your scheduled course of fire is, and then some extra in case you get any misses and you have to repeat that shot or something. And like Mark was saying, we did this before the ammunition craziness came up, but we did split it into two divisions. So you'll have a chance to either carry a bunch of ammunition and shoot at a bunch of targets a bunch of times, or carry a lesser amount and shoot at the targets fewer times. We've been asked several times if people can buy ammunition when they get here. I don't know. We'll probably try and get folks that have it stacked really deep if they want to bring ammunition and sell it. But I'm telling you now that you're probably not going to get a deal on it, because if somebody's selling you their ammunition here, then they're going to have to replace it. And that means they can't replace it for anything less than what the market is. Don't expect to come and buy ammunition. If we do have any that we can sell, don't expect to buy it at anything less than market, because that would not be fair to the seller. But we'll try and round up some folks that will have extra ammunition so that folks can purchase some when they get here. I'm not guaranteeing you that we'll be able to, but we're going to try and do that. And folks have asked if we can lend them firearms, and I don't see a good way of doing that. So the best thing to do is, if you need a firearm, is to hit up one of your buddies and ask them. Now, we might be able to work it where if two of you guys want to come and you're going to share firearms, that we can split you guys up, have one run at the very beginning and have one run at the end, so that that first guy is back across the line in time to hand off his firearm to the next guy. I don't know if we can do that yet. I'll talk to Mark about it and see if we can, but I don't see why we couldn't, because it's only 3.5 miles. So we should be able to get one of the guys back in time to have them hand off their rifle.
Yeah, you know, I think we could probably work something like that out. And a couple of the emails I've gotten have been, people asking about the ranges themselves, the shooting stations. Will there be someone there to help us out or help me out with, my gun or whatever? And I have to remind them, this is a biathlon, it's a competition. There's other people in line. We don't want to create a bottleneck, and the stations need to be moved quickly and smoothly, safely. And once again, this is a competition. It's not the time to learn how to shoot out there. So
right.
Expected to know how to use their weapons.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, that being said, we will have each of the stations will have a minimum of two guys there working the station. These guys will be qualified firearms folks, but don't expect to get shooting instruction at the station, other than where your targets are and what you're going to have to do, you know, positions you have to get in or two or anything like that. But don't expect lessons on how to shoot at the shooting station. Also, we talked about the sponsors earlier, I also want to mention Lambeau's Armory in Montgomery, Texas, because they're sponsoring us too. And Lambeau's, it was really good about not gouging folks on things like magazines. Even when the magazines, you know, we got a big old stack, a big box of P-Mags from Lambeau's a couple of weeks before the craziness. And then the craziness started, and we said, maybe we should get some more, but now they're going to be awfully expensive. But Mark was able to order another big box of P-Mags from Lambeau's. And Lambeau's was not, even though P-Mags went to $75 a piece on GunBroker and everywhere else, Lambeau's was still selling them at, how much were you paying? I looked on the list, it was $9.95.
Yeah, it was a Christmas special. It was 10 magazines for $110. So we got quite a few.
Right. And they could have upped their price, but they didn't. Now, they didn't have them in stock at the time, but they said, we'll go ahead and take your order for the price that we said. And as soon as they come in, we'll send them to you. And so I really appreciate folks like that not gouging, because you can look at other places. I went into a bunch of gun shops and stuff to hand out to the Zombie Run flyers and the tickets and stuff like that, and you were seeing P-Mags, a going price for P-Mags at the gun stores and stuff like that was $45 when they should have been $10. And so not everybody was staying true to their prices, and that's one of the things that I really have appreciated from Lambeau's. And we bought we spent quite a bit of money there in the last year, and we really appreciate them helping to sponsor the event. And we're hoping that, you know, this year was a big learning curve for us on doing this and getting sponsors and stuff like that. Plus, Mark and I were talking about this this last week, and that is when you're first starting out doing something like this, it's a lot harder to do things like secure sponsors and stuff like that, because anybody can go up and say, hey, we're doing an event and we'd like for you to sponsor us. And they go, oh, yeah, well, who are you? And we say, well, we're BattleRoadUSA.com. They go, never heard of you. And so it's not that easy, but we plan on having this as an annual event. Now, I don't know. I'm still a bit curious why Mark chose February, other than he said he liked the absence of foliage in February.
But it was the
absence of snakes. Okay. Yeah. All right. I guess that trumps. Cause we were still talking about that the last time we were in some cold, wet weather, we were saying how much we appreciated that we don't have to lay on the ground all night long in an ambush anymore because we don't, because we're civilians. And and we still have been doing it at Appleseeds, but we don't like to do it. So it kind of surprised me when Mark said, let's do it in February, because that's the coldest, rainiest month of the year. And I guess that was it, the absence of snakes.
That was it, and, you know, it's. But then again, it's Texas, and old Grunt PM'd me earlier tonight, if I knew what the forecast was, and, well, you know, it's Texas. It could be hot and dry or cold and raining. I don't know.
Yeah, I put an article on the blog about that because it is Texas, and that is Battle Road USA, EOTWAWKIZD.blogspot.com. Okay, Battle Road USA. End of the world as we know it, zombiedestruction.blogspot.com. And that's what the article, one of the things that I wrote in there, you know, only fools and Yankees try and predict Texas weather. And it has been, this time of the year has been T-shirt and short weather and sweating all the way to snow. Just a couple of years ago, there was snow in February, so they got photographs of it, and I put them on the website because it could be either way. So we don't know for sure. Right now, it says, well, this is their prediction, is that the day of the run is going to be 48 degrees for the low with a high of 61, which is not bad. That means that you can do the event with your gear and maybe a long sleeve Under Armour and then something like a light jacket. And you should be good and not have to pop the jacket off or anything like that. You can just unzip the front and to get cooled off. So 61 is a high, 48 is a low, and it's going to be cloudy with, this is odd, a 0% chance of rain. I've hardly ever seen zero. But 0% chance of rain. That's the forecast for that weekend. All right? So you guys have no fear. And it's even a zero for Friday when the range officers are going to run. Now, Thursday, the day before, we got a 40% chance of rain. So that means it might be nice and muddy on the trail. But I've tried to prepare for that. I've tried to make sure that I've left the cut grass and stuff down on the trail. I haven't tried to scrape any of the trail to the mud because I don't want you guys having to run on the bare dirt and the mud. I've tried to leave the leaves and everything on the trail to cover it up as much as possible. When you get to an obstacle or a shooting station, I've tried to make sure that I put sand without any binder in it, you know, without any kind of clay or anything in it, so it's just sand or gravel that you're stepping on instead of mud. And I think we're going to be in good shape. I've still got quite a bit to do to finish up, especially on the obstacles and stuff like that. But I've got 10 days to do it in, and I think that we're going to be good to go. So you can go to battleroadusa.com and take a look at the event, and then if you'd like to, go ahead and go to the Eventbrite page and get registered on Eventbrite there, because if you want to get a T-shirt, you're going to have to make sure that you register and let us know, because in about 4 days, you'll just have to take whatever shirt we give you, because in about 4 days, or 3 days actually, I won't be able to get any other additional shirts other than the ones that we have. So hurry up and get registered for the event. And, Mark, you got anything else?
No, that's it. Get on Eventbrite, register, see you out there, and let's go out and have a good time.
Okay, perfect. Hey, listen, somebody must have been listening because they just went to Eventbrite and got a ticket. So
all right.
That means that person... Let me see. That person is a, let's see, where's it? Extra large. Okay, he's getting a shirt. I'm telling you, he's getting a shirt. So, all right. I want to thank everybody for listening in tonight. And we'll be back on this next Thursday. I want to thank all the folks that called in. I want to thank Ed for calling in and Kaylin. And especially like, thank my co-host Sandy, because he's there ready to pull the trigger and jump in and make sure there's any trouble. He's always got my back, and besides that, he's just a dang fine guy. Wish you were closer, Sam, so you could come to the run.
I'd love to.
And say hey to all the folks there in New Mexico for me.
I will.
And we'll talk to the rest of you guys this next Thursday. Until then, God bless everybody, and we'll see you next Thursday. Good night, everybody. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Sam. Thanks, Ed and Kaylin. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Good night.
Good night, Sam.
All righty.
When I was young, my teacher told me that I was free. And as a child, I grew up programmed by TV. And as a teenage boy, I found out just how free is free. Lots of good talk from some good smoke. While I'm
on the streets, tracking who we meet. You call this liberty?